There it is. So it's all good.
Don't ask away.
Okay, so...
tell you what I remember.
Yeah, no, this is going to be fun, man. And then what you don't remember, it doesn't matter, because I'll come back and I'll do a follow-up with you. And then anything else that you want to add, then we'll be able to...
See, for me, it was just very basic, you know.
Okay, let me get a couple things from you, okay, because I have to get a... This is... look at how... First off, this is the archives guidelines now for Cocaine Anonymous.
Wow.
Now, the guy behind this stuff is our archive chair, and his name's Cameron F. out of Toronto. So he is pretty amazing. He has done so much work to make this stuff possible. So how do I spell your last name?
K-E-N-N-Y.
K-E-N-N-Y.
Yeah.
Okay, and then this is a release. What's today's date? Feels weird doing this.
You mean I gotta sign a release?
Yeah, well, hey, that's the way of the world.
Jesus.
So they don't...
Times have changed.
Well, you know what? It has. You ain't shitting it, ass.
Oh, I've seen so much change, and not most of it for the good either.
I agree with you. I agree with you perfectly well. But this isn't... what it says is that you... that you're cool with us recording this, and that if they wanted to take part of your stuff to make the part of the heart, the history of Cocaine Anonymous.
Oh, absolutely.
If they wanted to do PSAs or anything, obviously they wouldn't use your image or likeness, but... okay. And then that's just where you'd sign that. So then that way I got all the... So this is the LA Times article.
Yeah. There were several of them.
That's you.
Yeah, I was a little chubbier then.
What am I doing with my glasses? Here, you want it? They're right there, Tom, right next to you.
Oh, gee, I never thought of looking there.
The New Hollywood Connection, Cocaine Anonymous. God, I love that. That is wonderful. And then I'll have a whole bunch of questions. So let's see how this baby starts.
There you go.
Okay, so the first thing that I got to do is just tell you thank you very much. It's a privilege to do archives interview with you. I got all sorts of questions, and we're going to have all sorts of times to be able to kick it around and figure out how whatever you want to share. So what we're going to do is we're going to start with... This is a big question. How do you recall how Cocaine Anonymous started? What was the impetus that was happening at that time?
Well, at that time, I worked for the Motion Picture and Television Fund. And we had a rehab program called Studio 12. It was for studio people, 12 steps of recovery. And that took place... in North Hollywood. Now, I used to go on, when I first started working there, was in 81. And I was going on to a lot of the sets, talking to business agents, etc., etc. And I started to realize the enormity of the cocaine problem in our industry.
Yeah, back then, cocaine was the rich man's drug.
Right. So a lot of these guys I knew were alcoholics, but they kept saying, no, I'm a cocaine addict, and they wouldn't come in. So I decided to say, I said to myself, well, you know, how can we get them to come in? I said, well, maybe we can start a meeting, we'll call it Cocaine Anonymous, and we'll see what happens. And so I called up Dr. Persh, who runs the Navy program, and I knew him. He's a psychiatrist, a medical doctor, and he was very active in taking people to Alcoholics Anonymous meetings and lecturing to other doctors and that type of thing. So I said, what do you think about that? If I could get something started, we'll call it Cocaine Anonymous. And I said, we'll get people to come into Cocaine's Anonymous, and the ones who just have a cocaine problem can stay there, and the ones who are alcoholic can come to AA. He said, it'd be a great idea, he said, if you can do it. And I said, well, I think I'm going to try. And so I got together three or four guys who came to Studio 12 who were cocaine addicts. And I said, well, we're going to start a meeting. We'll start it down at the clinic.
Do you remember who those guys were? Do you recall their names?
Greg Cheevers was one of them. And, Tommy, what the hell was his last name? But, so, you know, I called different people that we knew who had some cocaine problems. And we had about 10 or 12 people at the first meeting, maybe 14. So some of the people who showed up said, well, you got to make this an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting that addresses cocaine. And we're all squabbling there. And finally, I remember Cheever saying to me, what are you going to do, boss? And I said, I don't care what we call it. Let's just get it started. And that was the whatever meaning of alcohol. It was called the whatever meaning. Now, no one spoke about alcohol. It was all about cocaine. But they call it the whatever meaning. And Tony Moorhead was the secretary of that meeting, Tony M. And let's see where it goes. Because, you know, I was saying, you know, you cannot have a meeting in Alcoholics Anonymous that addresses cocaine. It's against the traditions. But because they were all arguing, he said, what are you going to do? Throw them out? Forget about it? And I said, no, let's let it go and see what happens. And Cocaine Anonymous happened. Now, across town, Beverly Glen Hospital had a Cocaine Anonymous meeting going. They'd started it up a week before. But at that time, it was closed to the public. It was just open to the people who went in there because all they were trying to do was address the problem of cocaine. You know? So I had a friend of mine who was the PR director over there, and I called him up and I said, we're starting this meeting, et cetera, at the clinic on the way in Beverly. And he said, we already have a meeting going. I said, well, that's great. I said, we'll send our people with cocaine problems over to you, and you send yours to us. And they said, no, it's just open for people who are in the hospital, you know, for treatment. So we opened our meeting, and then they opened their meeting. And that's how it started.
Do you recall when that was? Do you remember the month or the dates or...
It was in November, but I thought it was before the 18th, personally.
Yeah, it could have been before the 18th.
I thought it was.
I think that when they stopped calling it whatever and called it Cocaine Anonymous.
What happened to that meeting, and Johnny Siegel was a part of that. And that's kind of really disturbed me, because when they said that they were going to make it an AA meeting, it started off as a CA meeting. They were all talking about cocaine. And when they decided to do that, you know, I had them, they had rent there for a goddamn dollar a week, because those people were my friends, the union people in the motion picture industry. And instead of that money going to Cocaine Anonymous, and we'd get 200, sometimes 250 people at that meeting, you know, and they couldn't go to Cocaine Anonymous. So I never understood why they were trying to do that, make it an AA meeting, you know. Because I guess when it started off, we called it the whatever meeting, it was supposedly an AA meeting that addressed cocaine, but I didn't see it that way. Because all they were was talking about cocaine, and I let it go, because I was not going to throw them out. I just said, let's see what happens, you know, come on. I have an open mind about this crap, you know. So then that became the whatever meeting, became an AA meeting. And all of that money would have been going to Cocaine Anonymous, you know, wasn't going. And those guys who went there, you know, I don't know if you want me to name names, you know. But
yeah, any of them are good.
Bob Dreyfus and mine, you know, and the comic, Richard Pryor, those guys that used to come there. And then I got a meeting hall over at Cedars-Sinai Hospital. I knew people over there. And got a meeting on Melrose at another union hall. And at that time, I was just picking guys who had 2 weeks, 3 weeks as the leader. You're a leader. You're a secretary. You're this. You're that. I mean, they had someone pointing out to do what they needed to do because they're all newcomers. What do they know? You know what I mean? So... So then, I think, who was that guy's name? He started the first meeting in the valley. He got killed on a motorcycle. I forget his name. Ask Kenny Cross, he'll probably know. And he started one in the valley. And then at my rehab at Studio 12, we got one going there. And then I had friends of mine down in Newport Beach who started meetings in Newport Beach, you know. They were sober members of AA, and they both had done cocaine, so they started a meeting down there, you know, just start taking off. And the more shows I went on, and the more the phone rang, the more people came.
Cool, so this was November, this was like all happened in November of 82, and it just started to really grow a little bit there. Now, what was your sobriety date? What's your sobriety date, Tom?
My sobriety date is January 12th, 71.
That's a long time. Yeah. So back then, you had, I mean, that was a huge amount of time. And
well, I had 11 years.
Yeah, no, that's fantastic.
And I knew because I was running rehabs down in Newport Beach and, you know, Costa Mesa. And, you know, so I had an idea.
So that was your background in doing running rehabs?
Yeah. But the one with the motion picture industry was just for industry people, and there was no charge for that because it was a benefit of being a member of the business of the motion picture industry.
Yeah, that's a pretty cool benefit.
Yeah.
Okay, let me see, what else do I have? So the impetus when you start going around, you're talking to the different agents and people in production or in actors, whatever.
Yeah, and I remember I was on, I think it was the Ghostbuster movie or whatever. Everybody's loaded. Now, I didn't know that much about cocaine because I never used it. So I had to rely on a lot of the guys in Studio 12 who were in AA, but were, you know, real cocaine users, you know, and they'd explain things to me, you know. And then I'd see that goddamn line over at Paramount. They used to call it the gram a day machine. It was $100 a gram then. And they'd all be lined up getting their money so they could get their cocaine at noon. It was wild. You know, it was pretty wild. So that's the impetus for starting it, you know, because a lot of them wouldn't come in, and they were alcoholics, but they said, no, cocaine's my problem, because it was paramount in their life at that point, taking all their money, where you can buy a bottle for $6, you know, those days. But they had their machine over in, on the lot. It's called the gram-a-day machine.
That's the ATM machine?
Yeah.
The gram-a-day machine?
Yeah, the gram-a-day.
$100.
It was $100 a gram then. Yeah.
Well, you know, when cocaine first started, right, it was supposedly non-addictive, yeah. Right? That was the hustle, the gram-a-day machine.
Yeah, Paramount. And I imagine at other studios, but that's where I really noticed that line. What the hell's going on over there? Oh, that's where we got our money, gram-a-day, $100.
So what was the recovery community's attitude towards Cocaine Anonymous? You know, were cocaine addicts welcome in the meetings, or was it...
Well, it depends on where you lived. Like in L.A., anything goes, you know what I mean? No one cared. The bottom line was, we're going to help people regardless of what their problem is. You know, coke, heroin, you know, we didn't care. The bottom line was, you always help people. Now, if you got out further in other areas, you know, like Iowa or some of the old-time areas of AA, they would not allow that. They would not. You had to say you were an alcoholic to be in those meetings. But in my particular case, we're at Studio 12. Well, they were all young people, and, you know, they intermingled, you know. But at the AA meetings, they didn't give pitches on how much cocaine they used. They would just say, you know, I'm an alcoholic, and I did a lot of blow, you know, and blah, 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 and then they would, you know, share how they got over it. But there were areas where you could not say you're a cocaine addict, or they would not let you stay in a meeting, because they're closed meetings.
Okay, let's see what we have next on our list of questions. We got all sorts of them here, so anytime you want to take a break or just let me know. So, so you saw the need, you welcomed them in, they started getting sober, and the next thing you know, Cocaine Anonymous started to, what was driving the growth, what drove the growth of Cocaine Anonymous from that first little cluster of people at the motion picture studio, and then those few folks that were in treatment over at that hospital? What mainstream Cocaine Anonymous?
Well, going on the TV shows.
Okay, what TV
making
shows?
Making the phone ring. Well, there was Good Morning America, and at the time there was another show that was popular, West 57th Street, Entertainment Tonight. And every newscast show in L.A. I've been on, you know. And when it went on, the phone would ring. In fact, after that article you read there, you have there, the Cocaine Connection.
Now, the Cocaine Connection, this article that you've given me a copy of is from the calendar section of the Los Angeles Times.
Yeah.
On Sunday, December 26, 1982.
Yeah, when that came out, I had at least just 80 calls in my call box at the clinic. And they said, what the hell have you done? We can't even take calls for our patients. You know, the phone doesn't stop ringing. So that's the thing. And then when what happens is then that article is picked up and it goes all over the country.
So this article from the Times was syndicated across the country then?
Yeah. And then I started to get calls from people, and I remember I kept note of it, and I got calls from 22 different states, and a call from England. I sent these packets that I had made up down in my office. You know, I don't ask for permission to do anything when this is... There was no structure yet. But I knew if we kept the phone ringing and people started their own meetings and the need was there, they would attract other people. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So that's the way it took off. So every time I went on a show, the phone would ring. And then finally, the young people in CA finally got their own little central office going. And they had their number in there. Now, I never gave out my number again, but from those initial articles and shows I went on, that phone kept ringing for years.
And that phone was the phone number that...
9958, what is it? Yeah.
It was the phone number for the motion picture rehab?
Yeah. My office, yeah.
And so the calls came in, so... Again, the shows that you were on were Entertainment Tonight.
Good Morning America.
Good Morning America.
West 57th Street. These are the ones I remember.
Right.
There was a special with Araldo and every talk show.
And every time you'd be on there,
phone would ring.
The phone would just ring.
It would just ring. In fact, when they got their office going, they said, "Please let us know when you're going on, because the phone rings like hell, and we got to have extra people to answer that phone."
So okay. How did you? So when you were on these shows, how did you deal with the topic of, or with the tradition of personal anonymity in that?
Oh, I didn't care about that, because I knew I wasn't going to be a member of CA.
Got it. So you were not there, yeah. You were not saying, "I'm a member of Cocaine Anonymous." You're telling people about Cocaine right. Anonymous, about the fact that there's a...
Yeah, I'm just there to get it going and keep pushing it, because I started the goddamn thing. I didn't want to see it fail when I knew it had a good chance of happening. But I knew you had to keep the phone ringing, and you had to get the meeting halls, and you had to do, you had to incorporate it with attorneys, because the people in Texas were trying to steal it, and they didn't know how to do any of that, or even knew it was necessary. And then Rip, he made the commercial for when you come to the end of the line, call the number.
And that was the number for Cocaine Anonymous?
Right.
They had gotten a little office going in that number then?
I don't know if by that time they had it or not, but...
Can you describe the commercial a little bit more?
Well, it showed a line of cocaine and a hand, I think there was in. When you come to the end of the line, call Cocaine Anonymous.
That's brilliant.
Yeah. So then... we had a lot of creative young people there. And then what I did the footwork, because they didn't have the contacts, nor did they know the people.
So
I went out to the TV stations, and I got it on, I don't know, 3 or 4 TV stations that ran constantly. But getting it incorporated was a big thing, too. One guy was in the program, I forget his name, and the other attorney wasn't. It was a friend of his, and they incorporated Cocaine Anonymous, which was, they needed to do that or lose it. Now, it could have been a real fiasco then, so we got it incorporated first, and as a,
So. Wow, that's amazing. So you did the footwork, you had the connections, you had the years of sobriety, and they had the enthusiasm, the cocaine problem was how great a problem was it?
Well, it was a big problem.
In Hollywood at that time?
Oh, it was big problem. Yeah, and... they used to have bowls of cocaine out, you know what I'm saying? The parties and shit like that. It's pretty serious problem. And then when what happened with Pryor, that even brought more people in.
Right, when he freebased himself up.
Yeah, old Richard. Funny guy. You know, when person, you couldn't hear a peep out of him.
When what now?
In person.
In person, he didn't talk.
He was like the quietest guy ever, like a mouse. But on stage, he could rock and roll with the best of them, that guy. He was good. So what else you want to know?
Let's see. We've got tons of questions, lots of things. This is a really interesting article. Thank you for giving me a copy of this thing.
Yeah.
And I'll make sure that we get it put into the archives.
Well, there's quite a few of them if you when you get back, if you want to Google L.A., Los Angeles Times, put in cocaine and this and that, and the other articles will come up.
Oh, well, if I do that search, thank you very much. Let me make a note of that. Pretty amazing, huh?
Yeah, it is. It was a lot of fun too, but it was a lot of hard work.
So cocaine was just devastating him. The movement started, yeah. And then through all of the media appearances, the Entertainment Tonight, Good Morning America, and all that stuff, all occurred around what time? Late 82?
Yeah, you know. 1983? Oh, no, not that, you know, long before that, 81, 82. And now you got CA starting in 82 or 81?
82. I could be mistaken. I think it was 82. Yeah, it could be. I'm mistaken yeah, often.
It's in 81. Because when I started the rehab for motion picture, that's when I started CA that year, 81.
So that's when you started working with the whatever group
yes,
and all that stuff?
Yes, because that one says 82, right? That article, December when that came.
Yeah, this shows this was December of 82, yes.
Well, maybe it was 82 then.
Yeah, it could have been.
Whatever year it was. But see, what I knew that, you know how TV and presses, they wanted to talk to somebody from the motion picture industry. See what I'm saying? Because that's where the brunt of the problem was in Hollywood. And I was the guy. Now, founder stuff, that don't mean nothing to me. What meant something to me was getting it done. Just do it, you know. You know that old Nike article, just do it? Well, we were doing that before Nike. That's dope.
Well, thank God for the doing, because, cocaine was sweeping the country.
Right.
I mean, it was devastating lives, and thank God there were...
So I had no one to listen to, but a bunch of... I'm not going to listen to a bunch of newcomers, you know what I mean? I'm just going to do it and see what happens. That's what happened. That's what I guess they call it, the whatever happened.
So they had the whatever meeting, and then eventually became...
meeting.
Okay, that became an AA.
They tried to say from the beginning it was an AA meeting because they were arguing about, and I said that's against AA traditions. AA cannot have a meeting that addresses cocaine. Then we won't have the meeting. They're all arguing, So I said to my friends, I said, what are you going to do, boss? You going to throw them out? I said, no, we're going to let this thing go and see what happens.
So then do you remember the name of the next meeting that was started? Do you recall the name of that?
No. There was one on Melrose, and then there was one in the Cedars Hospital. The one over in the hospital in Beverly Glen, that was the next one because they opened up to the public right after we did. So they were the second meeting, the one at Beverly Glen. But then we had another one at, we had one on Tuesday and Thursday night at the clinic in the whatever meeting. And then we had one on Melrose.
So it's an amazing growth to think that it went from that to this worldwide fellowship that has created so much. So you have a great deal of history about the beginning of Cocaine Anonymous. It's incredible to be here. It's a privilege to be talking to you. So what were the meetings like in the beginning?
Oh, if you could keep them in one place for one day. They were pretty wild. There was really a lot of enthusiasm. In fact, that meeting on Sunset Strip, I thought we were going to lose that because of the parking situation. We were hauling up traffic on Sunset Strip. I mean, it was pretty wild.
How many people were do you remember the name of that particular meeting?
Well, that became the whatever meeting.
Oh, okay.
We used to get a couple of hundred people at that meeting. That was a big, big meeting.
Wow. So, a lot of these questions are for people that have come after you. Obviously, there aren't many questions that are pointed towards the exact starting of it. So I'm going to work my way through this list. Okay, so we know the potential members found out about, how did potential cocaine addicts find out about CA meetings at that time?
Well, in Hollywood, I would say that the people themselves were carrying the message too, not only the shows. You know, hey, I went to, you know, because they're an energetic bunch, and they all have problems, and it's a close-knit place, Hollywood, you know. So that helped to carry the message a lot. It was from one person talking to another person to another person. So now you get a couple of hundred people, you know, and it's in the news, it's on the talk shows, and everybody's, you know, who has the problem wants to go.
And they were staying sober off of cocaine.
Well, I'm still shocked, but I'll tell you, a whole lot of them first group of people who came through there, the ones I used to yell at all the time, yeah, they're still sober. I had one guy, he says, yeah, I think you ought to come to the meeting. And I says, for Christ's sake, you can't string two goddamn sentences together. You need to be here. He come down, I guess, to beat me up or something, and he stayed. I was pissed. It's the time of the meeting. Just be here. You can't string two sentences together, for Christ's sake, I said to him. I think his name was Michael. I forget his name, but yeah. He's still around.
Was that Michael Glasser?
No, he has another story, that guy.
Okay.
But he used to come to the meetings. Michael Glasser, yeah, pretty good guy.
Okay, what was the...
But I'll tell you, you know, he married Virginia. Virginia was secretary...
Veronica, you mean.
Veronica. She was secretary of the Thursday night meeting, which was one of the second or third meetings we had. But see, then they go, you know, they want to make, like, the whatever meeting. They made it an AA meeting, but initially it was addressing cocaine. But they're all full of energy. You know Veronica?
You know what? I've talked to her on Facebook and exchanged some emails with her a couple of times, and I've spoken with Michael.
Yeah.
And they're both still sober.
Yeah.
They both have like 31 years now, so they were both brand new back then.
Yeah. Yeah, they were both brand new.
So the social climate, here's one of the questions. What was the social climate around Cocaine Anonymous meetings at the time?
Well, I mean, everybody was falling in love, I guess. You know what I mean?
Falling in love with each other or with Cocaine Anonymous?
Well, I told you about that one meeting when I had that one doctor there. And the guy was taking a convulsion. I figured I'd let him help out. You know, he's a doctor. And he says, hey, Kenny, he says, I don't do convulsion. I'm a plastic surgeon. And I won't name the hospital. But that year, he got four other doctors into the program. It's pretty wild.
That's great. And so what'd you do with the guy who had the convulsion in the Cocaine Anonymous meeting?
Well, when he came to and said, what happened? I said, you just led your first Cocaine Anonymous meeting and they loved you. I said, yeah. His girlfriend says, are we taking him to the hospital? He says, no, help me get him to a chair. I said, I sat him down, he's doing a little like... tapped him a little. I said, listen up, you might hear something that's going to help you here. I mean, I don't understand, you know. Nowadays, you know, if you did that, they'd be calling central office to turn you in for abuse or something, you know. I don't understand that kind of concept.
Okay, so here's another question. How did Cocaine Anonymous conduct its business in the beginning? How did they collect the money or distribute it or save it or... how'd they do it?
Don't ask me. I don't know. I mean, by that time, they had developed, you know, their own hotline, and they developed a core of people who took care of that. I didn't want to be involved in any of that. You know what I'm saying?
So, and so was that at the time that you pretty much...
That was about the time I was getting ready to really back out. It was about 8 months, 9 months, something like that.
So you were like Dr. Push said, the spark plug?
Yeah.
And then got out of the way and let the cocaine addicts
run
the show?
Yeah. I still took a lot of calls because they always had my number, you know. But by that time, I had sent the packets off to 22 states, pack it off to England, you know. And then they were taken over.
Can you go into a little detail?
I was glad that they were because, I mean, I was exhausted. You know,
I'll bet.
I got a rehab program to run myself, you know.
So you stayed running the motion picture. You got out of Cocaine Anonymous once they were up and functioning.
Yeah.
And how long did you stay with the motion picture?
10 years.
Rehab. Ten years.
Yeah.
So you left there in 91 or 92?
Yeah.
And you mentioned that you had, in those first months, the appearances, the print media, and that you'd put together some packets and sent it out to how many?
22 states. I didn't keep track of what states they
were. 22 states and?
In England.
And England. So what was in the, what was in those packets?
That's a good question. I don't remember specifically, but I based it a lot on the steps of AA. You know, I just changed the wording. And what I told them is, you know, approach, and I used the AA big book, because they didn't have a book then, you know.
Right.
Things of that. It was very simple, because you have to keep it simple for people to understand it. If you try and complicate things, people just get discouraged and say, I can't do this. But the packets were very simple, and when they got them, they knew just how to start a meeting.
Perfect.
I can't, remember exactly what I put in them, but the packets were about 4 or 5 pages, I remember that. And I would ship them out to anyone who called from these different states, because they were reading the articles that in the TV appearances, they wanted it.
So, question for you, did, after it got started, did you have any more involvement with Cocaine Anonymous once the service office started up?
No, once in a while they'd ask me to speak or something, but that was it. That was, you know, I mean,
do you have any of your speaker tapes by chance or CDs?
No, I don't. I was never really into all of that. I mean, they had some good speakers, and
do you recall any of the early cocaine speakers that were particularly interesting, or just all of them, huh?
Yeah, because, you know, we just had mostly just regular people. They didn't have then any speaker meetings. I don't even know if they have them now. You know, an AA used to be, an hour speaker.
Yeah, we got tons of them now.
No, but
Cocaine Anonymous has tons of speakers.
Well, they didn't have them then.
In fact, Ken Cross is speaking November 18th in Phoenix.
Well, good for Kenny.
So
tell him I always knew he'd be a star.
Yeah, I will tell him. That's very funny. That's beautiful. I love it.
He's a good guy.
He was
one of the guys that, you know, I mean, he stuck with it. Kept it. Once they figured it out, they did good.
Yeah, they did real good.
Yeah.
They did real good. Once they got it, once...
Well, you know, you knew that would happen, but you knew it was going to take a few months, you know.
Well, because there were so, you know, there were so many cocaine addicts pouring onto the scene, there was such a tremendous need for it.
Yeah.
So you want to go in this next section, or you want to take a break?
Go ahead. Keep rattling.
Okay, here we go. Okay,
catch me while I'm awake.
This section is called Specific Memories. So who else was going to Cocaine Anonymous meetings in those days that you first started it? Who do you remember as some of the folks that were there with you?
Well, it was Marhead and Kenny Cross and Michael and George, I don't want to give their last names. George is a doctor, so I certainly don't want to get hit.
Sure, understood.
But I remember one story when he came to me and he says, they want me to go into treatment. I said, who wants you to go into treatment? He said, friends of mine. I says, how long are you sober now? He says, 25 days. I says, give me the money, I'll make better use of it. I said, you don't need treatment. I said, just keep doing this thing, what you've been doing, each and every day. You know, and by that time, they only had 4 or 5 CA meetings, and he was, you know, going to AA and you know, he's still sober today. And then there was a big-time cardiologist from UCLA. He's still sober. Those guys, you know, and there were a lot of Hollywood. I don't want to mention my
stuff. Yeah, that's fine. No need to do
and
that.
They were all got, you know, and some of them were big-time heroin addicts and got clean and sober in the movement of Cocaine Anonymous, and then they made their way into AA. And then a lot of those guys stopped saying they were addicts and just became members of AA. Did you know that?
Yeah, I've met quite a few of them over the years. So what literature was read in early CA meetings?
Well, I think we read the same thing we read in AA meetings, except we changed the, you know, just did it the same way out of the book, good book.
Just switched the word to cocaine?
Yeah.
There was a reading called Who is a Cocaine Addict? It was written by a guy out of Chicago that was one of the first pieces of Cocaine Anonymous literature. Did that come after you?
You know, I was just flying by the seat of my goddamn pants.
No, I'm with you. I'm glad you did, too. Thank you.
I mean, that, you know, they became organized. They organized a program called Cocaine Anonymous, you know. In the early days, it was just, you know, flying by the seat of our pants there and just making things happen so we could keep building the membership while we had so many relapses.
Yeah, cocaine was taking it back out in numbers too, huh?
Sure. So that's what I knew. I knew you got to keep that phone ringing because only so many are going to stay. Naturally, a lot of them got to come back, but you know.
Do you have a favorite or do you have any story that's particularly memorable about somebody who got sober or the circumstances of them getting clean?
Well, I remember Tony Morris. He was working for Warner Brothers at the time. And I guess Tony was in Special Forces or something, you know, service. He was a captain or whatever that he was. And I went over there, and I'm looking at this guy, and there was so much room in his shirt, like his head was swiveling around, and I'm saying, this guy has lost a tremendous amount of weight. He looked like a skeleton. And so I tried to throw step him into AA. I remember that. And then what happened is, where he was living, one of these young women took him to an AA meeting, and then he jumped, you know, and then he was one of the guys who got off cocaine to go into AA. And then he was the first meeting in the clinic. It was Tony Moorhead. I don't know if it's memorable or not.
That's memorable.
But I remember seeing him over there, and I tried to get that guy to take it. His head was swirling around, and his neck wasn't even touching his shirt.
Yeah, it was sucking my neck.
I was getting a kick out of that.
It's doing the same thing to people, unfortunately, now. But I don't know how many Cocaine Anonymous meetings there are in the world now. I'm sure it's in the thousands. And it's, I think, in 59 different countries.
Wow. I was not aware of that. That's wonderful. I'm glad I was part of it.
Yeah, no kidding. It's pretty special. So, okay, were there controversies within the fellowship that helped or hindered the growth in early CA?
Well, yeah, but I never listened to them.
Good for you.
Yeah, you know, I just wouldn't listen to them. I knew what had to be done, and I did it as best I could, and that was it. And a lot of those guys, you know, they went along with it too. But some of them, you know, they wanted to control this thing, you know. Well, you can't control something like that if you want it to grow. You know? It's like, you know, AA, when they had that big article about whatever, God, what was that, when that came out?
Jack Alexander.
Jack Alexander article. You know, it'll opened the door for what? Thousands of people who come in. And
then, so did your work. It opened the door for...
Well, that's what you do.
Ever-expanding fellowship today, somewhere in the world. Today, somewhere in the world, the odds are somebody's opening the first Cocaine Anonymous meeting someplace that never had one.
That's
before.
How it works. One drug addict talking to another. But when you start out something and you want it to, you know, take off, you got to, you know, that's the way it happened. That's the way it happened.
Okay, next question. What's the most fun you ever had in Cocaine Anonymous?
Actually, I didn't have much fun because I was fighting them and I was fighting, you know, it was always a fight for me. I didn't have much fun.
Oh, you having fun today?
I had a lot of fun in AA and in my program because, you know, I was working directly with them all the time. You know what I'm saying? When you work directly with people.
Yes, sir. Understood. I understand exactly what you're saying.
Because there were several of them. They're always giving me a bad time, you know, but I don't listen to them. I knew what my job was to do that, and I did it, and that was it.
Get that phone to ring. Get some folks in the door.
Get the phone to ring. Get it incorporated, you know. You know, get the meeting halls, because I was in the motion picture industry, so I got the union halls, and pick the leaders, you know, get those things on TV, you know, the PSAs, you know, did that, and I'm the one who went out and got them on the TV stations, you know, those are the things, that's the grunt work.
And because of your position running the rehab at the motion pictures industry, people would talk to you.
I already had contacts, they would talk to me.
So it's like God might have picked just the right guy.
Well, I don't know.
At just the right moment in time.
I don't know, but
it's interesting to me.
It worked out that way because, you know, I mean, none of those other guys could go on TV. They were in CA. They couldn't say, you know, I'm a member, you know. But I could because I knew when that came out, it said, Founders, oh, shit, who put that in there? You know, that wasn't supposed to be in there. But then when it was in there, I used that. You know what I'm saying? You use that to get on the shows. And, you know how famed people are in Hollywood, man. Shit, man. You know what Hollywood is? A city of...
What?
Huh? People think there's more to life than there is, and there is. That's Hollywood. Jesus.
Okay. All right, so... What is your most memorable moment in early Cocaine Anonymous?
Let me shut this up.
Yeah, no problem.
I'm going to go to voicemail. Okay. Well, I think, I don't know about memorable moments, but when it started to take off and take hold, that's when I thought, you know, these people are going to make this going to work.
What'd that feel like?
I felt relieved, you know, that it was going to work, you know, and it would be okay, you know, and it was going to keep going. You know, I was relieved. I was relieved for the fact that I didn't have to do any more goddamn stuff.
Let me ask you a question. Why did you care so much about it?
Well, I always learned that the bottom line is that you help other people. It didn't matter if they were alcoholic. You know, when we were newly sober in Newport Beach, we would have heroin addicts, right? And they would come to AA, but they always said, I'm an alcoholic. Just say you're an alcoholic so you can be in the rooms. We don't care. You know, there's not one line in the big book that tells you how to stop drinking. You know what I'm saying? It's all about how to live so you don't have to drink again or use again. So I always knew it was the bottom line, just help people. People are suffering. You want to help them. It doesn't matter if they're coke or dope or whatever. You want to help them. That's the bottom line in all organizations. But when you get people who will say, well, I'm not going to say I'm an alcoholic, I'm going to say I'm a cocaine addict, and you're in the wrong area of the country, they're going to say, get out. That's it. You know. But it wasn't that way in Hollywood. Everybody, it was all pretty commingled, except for a few people.
Started right where it was supposed to, yeah. Exactly what it was supposed to.
Yeah, that's right. It's pretty wild.
Sounds a little divine, huh? So, next question is, what growing pains do you recall? Any in particular?
Oh, no, because, you know, by that time I was, like, outside the deal, you know. I mean, I didn't attend those. I attended a few of them, and I said, no, nah, this is not for me. I'm not that. That was not for me. That's for them to do, and I'm out of it. I just will sit there. So that's, I had nothing to do with anything like that.
So as the service structure in Cocaine Anonymous started to be built, and there were people like Ray Grossa or Johnny, yeah, yes, or Gil.
Gil, right. Yeah, I'm out. Right?
And then they had it, you knew, yeah, your work was done?
Oh, yeah, and I was glad because I was tired. And, you know, I kept losing my voice. You know, I mean, it was done in that sense.
How did you keep losing your voice?
I'm talking so much.
On the phone?
On the phone. I mean, we didn't have cell phones in those days. And my number would be called 7-8 times all night long in the middle of the night from cocaine addicts. And I would handle those calls. I took so many of those.
And what would you do with those people?
I'd talk to them and I'd refer them to the meetings, you know. And then I'd have parents call. I'd have, you know, a lot of parents call.
That brings me to the next question. Was there any Kohanon family group at that time, or was that to come?
No, I didn't know that.
And what help could you offer the families?
Well, I'd tell them about Al-Anon.
Awesome.
Yeah. But see, I wouldn't. I never shut my phone off. And even in my house, that phone kept ringing and ringing. Now people have cell phones to shut them off at night. That's their excuse. Well, my phone's off. And now if you have a landline, I never turn the landline off, ever. I always took the call.
Okay. All right, so next question. What mistakes were made?
What mistakes? None. You know why? Well, it is what it is today. It's a very ongoing, successful outfit. How could there be any mistakes?
I'm with you. I don't believe in mistakes anyway.
No mistakes.
That's a brilliant answer. Okay.
Christ.
I love it. Okay, here's the next question. What do you think you did right?
I never even thought about that. I think I did what I did, and it worked, and that's it. You know, my part of it worked, and, you know. I mean, you can go back and try and say, well, this would have worked better, but, you know, that's not what happened. What happened, happened. Accept it. You know what I mean? I don't see how it could have been done any differently.
That's their next question.
Because if I wasn't in the motion picture industry, who would have been talking to me? Nobody.
Right.
You know?
We pretty much covered these next two questions, but I'll just read them as we're going through. What would you have done differently?
Nothing.
And then, were there any particular difficulties you encountered?
Well, yeah, I caught a lot of flack from those, you know, the new guys when they were trying to organize this thing. You know, they didn't want me sending out packets. They didn't want me doing anything, but I just did it anyway. It's almost like 70% of the people in the United States didn't want to go into World War II. It was left up to the people. We never would have went. And And that is a war that had to be fought. So just because all of the people are saying they're wrong when they don't know, it doesn't mean they're wrong. I knew that.
Yeah. I like that, Tom. I like that. Okay, so the next one is about city involvement now. I know the answer to that. You're involved in Cocaine Anonymous through people like me and through all the people that put together
this
stuff.
Well, I mean, I'm willing to talk to people, you know, and try and help them get the story straight. But, you know, I don't have any involvement. I just involved in AA because I know how to help alcoholics. I know how to help cocaine addicts, too. Send them to the program.
You know, the program does wonderful.
The program is what makes people well. No one individual gets you well. They just point you in the right direction. And if you learn how to surrender your judgment and follow the judgment of other people who've been down the road to hell and made the journey back, then you got a shot. That line came from Clancy.
Clancy's a smart guy.
Lance's a brilliant guy. Yeah, Clancy said that one night. He said, you know, listen to those who've been down the road to hell and made the journey back. And back is better. And to stay back, we just got to keep doing what we do.
Hey, Tom, how are you?
Hey, Georgie.
Okay, so... so you attended all the early meetings of Cocaine Anonymous?
Quite a few of them, yes. Quite a few of them.
By the time they had the first Cocaine Anonymous convention in 1985, you were already long gone, back, just working in the motion picture studio, referring people to Cocaine Anonymous?
Yeah, well, they didn't ask me to speak for 15 minutes or something like that. You know, I don't remember much of any of that, you know what I'm saying? I had a lot of stuff going on in those days that I had to deal with in my own, you know, programs.
So one of the questions that I had was, do you recall the Los Angeles Times article? And then, lo and behold, I never knew that it was written about you. And Cocaine Anonymous. I just never knew that. It's just... Yeah. So I guess I don't need the answer to that question because I have the article now.
And you can Google the rest of it if you want.
Yes, I'm most definitely going to, and I'll get all that stuff. So you had said that you helped play a role in getting Cocaine Anonymous incorporated, because what was happening in Texas?
Well, I heard in Texas that they were using this in some hospital programs. Now, I don't know who brought that to my attention, but as soon as I heard that, I said, Jesus, we've got to get incorporated here. So this one guy, he was an attorney, and he was one of the first members. He's probably in AA now, but I don't remember his name. But I went to him, and he had a friend of his help him incorporate. And after that, you know, solid, like gold.
Yeah.
But see, you don't ask a bunch of newcomers to be involved because they didn't know about this stuff.
Okay, so...
But look at them now. That's the deal.
Yeah.
Now they're carrying the banner, and when they get older, other people will carry the banner, and it'll just keep going on and on and on, like AA, you know?
In 2013, the Cocaine Anonymous World Convention was in Florida, in Fort Lauderdale. The year before, it was the first time the Cocaine Anonymous Convention actually took place overseas, and it was held in England. And there were groups from Africa, South Africa, Nigeria. There were so many people from Sweden there, it would have blown your mind.
Well, it blows my mind now.
there were Dutch, Spaniards, people from South America, all over the United States and Canada, Mexico.
Well, it's happening. It's still happening.
Russia, the Middle East.
That's wonderful. 59 countries just
Even some tiny little, Trinidad, wherever there are people, there's drugs, and wherever there's drugs, there's an expanded Cocaine Anonymous that's heading there. So here's the next question. Are you still in contact with any of the other early members?
Just Kenny Cross. I talked to him from now on.
So, do you have any special memories of like Kenny Cross or Johnny or Reggie or Michael or Veronica or?
No, I mean it was just pretty cut and dry then. You know what I mean? Nothing memorable. Just all showing up, going to meetings, and helping others. That's the only memorable one was when the guy took the convulsion. And George said, "Hey, I can't help you." He says, "I'm a plastic surgeon. I don't do convulsions." I always remember that one. I'll tell you that. That son of a bitch. I like
that. That is so good. So okay. So here are some closing questions. Has the torch been passed?
Oh hell, that's been passed many times. In 30 years, I imagine. Yeah,
it's passed.
Yeah, I mean, I passed that torch around a year. I didn't want to. I mean, that was killing me.
No, I'm with you. The torch is definitely passed. And just to give you an idea from the moment where he wrote about the spark plug, it has turned into a virtual forest fire of Cocaine Anonymous spreading around this planet.
That's great.
In just this short amount of time, what's happening is just incredible. So I would definitely say the torch has been passed.
Passed.
Okay, so here's a question. Tom, how would you like to be remembered in Cocaine Anonymous?
Just as the spark plug who just got it, kept it going until they could do it for themselves. That's all, I mean, it was wild at the time and needed to be done, and I was capable enough to do that for a period of time and needed it to be done. And the grunt work, That's it. It's no big deal. The big deal is that it's all over the country, but I didn't do that. The people did that. Members did that.
Okay, this question, what CA service work gave you the most satisfaction?
Oh, the whole thing, I felt really relieved, and I felt like comfortable that I figured that we did enough to keep it going and that they would have an organization that would work ad infinitum. And then we'll keep it going, because there's a need for it.
Yeah, there's a need for
it. And I imagine there being a lot of meth heads in there, too.
Tons of meth addicts. Well, and now today we're getting them in with, because of our all-inclusiveness, because of that spirit of everybody's welcome, we are attracting opiates, pill addicts, heroin addicts, meth addicts, and now stuff called bath salts and spice and I'm sure that in the Soviet Union and in our area soon for crocodile and these other horrible drugs that keep coming down the road.
Yeah.
So let me ask you, how was that spirit of inclusiveness? How was that fostered or developed in Cocaine Anonymous?
Well, I would say that, Hollywood is an open-minded place, And they're all basically young people who most of them were doing many different drugs. You know, some of them were doing coke and pot and alcohol and whatever else. Some were doing heroin, coke, pot, heroin. So that's, but, you know, like I say, in different parts of the company, our country, they wouldn't let people like that in AA. But they wouldn't see it.
They were all welcome in CA.
Yeah.
Okay, so I got one last question. It's not really a question. I'd like to, today's November the 8th, 2013. I want to thank Cameron F. in Toronto for helping to put together the Archives Committee and get it to this point where we're able to finally start to capture the beautiful stories like we've had shared with us by Tom Kenny today. So, you okay if I video this last question? If you don't like that, you don't have to. It's just if there's anything you want to say, a message you'd like to share to Cocaine Anonymous.
Just say, hey, you made it a hell of an organization. From its humble beginnings to worldwide acceptance. That's just about it, you know. It was a very humble beginning, and then a worldwide acceptance. I think it's just a wonderful thing. And I know that people will keep it going because they have to save their silly asses. You know? That's about it.
Wow. I got to tell you what, this is awesome.
Well,
is it cool if I come back for follow-up interview?
I'm still around.
Well, I'll turn this thing off. Oh, my God. What a cool deal. I had it plugged in so I could keep the power going. It's unbelievable to capture these stories. And I got to tell you, I had in my own mind, Tom, how all this stuff would go. How Cocaine Anonymous started. And one of the things that I see that, because nobody's ever taken the time to get with the people that were there in those first days, there's confusion about how this thing started. Having spent this day with you, it's obvious to me that you answered the call based on the need. And as soon as the structure of Cocaine Anonymous was developed by those early members, Johnny and Michael and Veronica and Gil and all of those, and Kenny and all those people and Reggie, once it was done, you were done too.
Oh, yeah.
It was like they got to do their thing, and they got to, and they've done beautiful work.
Absolutely.
To build an unbelievable fellowship. So I never knew what the whole history was. I just knew from Ken Cross, he said, people talk about the history of Cocaine Anonymous. He goes, but the name that you never hear is the name that is most significant in our history. And that was the guy who saw the need and met it. And that's a man named Tom Kinney. So when I was standing at your door today, you know, flying out from Phoenix this morning, driving up here to Santa Fe, I stood at your door and I said a prayer. And I just said, God, you know, thanks for bringing me here, my journey to Cocaine Anonymous. But I wonder what Tom Kenny's going to be like.
And does he have Alzheimer's or what?
Yeah. Well, your mind's obvious. Your ability to recall things is incredible, but you're even more beautiful than I thought. You have a...
You know what they used to call
you're
me?
You're a humble servant.
You know what they used to call me?
What's that, sir?
My rehab, the Ayatollah Magnolia. I just fucking whipped them into shape, man. I got five guys in Newport Beach that all got 40, 41 years, this and that. Another one had 39, one died at 25, one 30. And they're all still sober. And they're all active.
And you're still very active in your program.
That's the way we learned it. That's all it was.
So let me ask you, Cocaine Anonymous' World Convention, the next World Convention is back in California. It's going to be in Long Beach, right there at a big big resort hotel by the water. Would you like to go?
Well, I mean, if I'm alive, well, I'll let you know. That's, you know, that's doable.
Do you fly or not?
I can't. Well, I guess I could fly, but with my leg, it's a pain in the ass.
Okay, I want you to consider something. If you want to come, one of my friends who's on the, he's the vice chair of the convention this year, wanted me to extend an invitation to you. We'll bring you out. We'll pick up the tab. We'll put you up. You get a chance to go out there. You could have some of your boys from Newport come down and visit with you if you would like to. If you like to be there, and well, if you would like to,
let me think about all that. You know, it depends on how healthy I am. You know,
understood.
I get tired easy.
And if you don't like to travel on your own, and you would, if you're going to take a journey like that, then I would fly out here and then fly with you, or I will fly out here and rent a car and drive you there, if you prefer driving. Of course, if you're in the car with me that many hours, you're going to have to listen to me a lot, and by then I'm sure I'll be able to really straighten you out and save your soul.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, a few people have tried that.
So this article, I think I probably, this article, should I read it into the recording, do you think?
I just take it with you.
Yeah, I'll just take it with me. I can't wait to read this thing. Because I had heard about this stuff, but it's interesting when we don't have it. Now, for me, when I read AA Comes of Age, what it did for me is it connected me to how fortunate I was to be born in this moment of time where there was a solution for alcoholics. But then a much deeper connection for me, because I came in through Cocaine Anonymous.
Yeah.
And it was that open spirit of inclusiveness that that felt so good and so right to me.
Well, and you were needed there. You're needed in AA too, but you probably were more needed there than anywhere. That's why you're there.
Oh, I think that's probably the case. That's where you were after
that
moment.
You can do more. You know what I'm saying? It's a younger outfit. You can do more. And you're doing it.
I went in as a young man. I'm not so young anymore, but...
How old were you when you went in?
I was 35.
Yeah. That's how old I was. 34, just going on 35.
Today, if I were to give you a picture of Cocaine Anonymous in the area where I'm from, it would be... probably 25 is the average age. We're getting, we're bringing him in. I started sponsoring a young man at Cocaine Anonymous a couple nights ago, took him through the first three steps already. And first time he heard me speak in a Cocaine Anonymous he was 12 years old. And he'd heard me a few times over the years, and then I ran into him on Monday night, and he was a day sober, and he said, I need a sponsor. And so we've been doing it ever since. So the Cocaine Anonymous message really resonates well with young people. Now, the recording is still, it's still on. I didn't turn that off yet. So why do you think our message resonates so well with young people?
Why? Because that's the drug they use, and that's the only hope they have. You know, they're not going to be welcome. Well, they're not going to be welcome so much in AA. They need identification, so they identify with you when they hear you speak. I mean, that's what it's all about. You know, they experience strength and hope. Well, when they hear your story, they identify. When they identify, that's where they want to be. You know, later on, if they have an alcohol problem too, they may go to both meetings. Who knows? But
So I hope that. It works out for you. If it does and you're up to it, I'll take you to that convention. I'll tell you what, I think it'd blow your mind to see thousands of cocaine addicts and alcoholics that have found, and meth addicts and and weed addicts that have all found home in Cocaine Anonymous because of its inclusive nature. And then when they would, when they do the geographical countdown, that's why I want you to go. I just want you to hear that. Let each state, area, country get up. And I think that you will understand fully at that time the scope and the magnitude of how God used you as an instrument of His peace.
Well, I, you know, I just, I was always an action guy. I'm not an organizational guy in a sense, you know. I was always an action guy, and I knew how to get things done. When I started the rehab and the motion picture, the same thing. I didn't know one person when I came up to Hollywood to run that place. I started it, made it into something. But when it comes down to organization and all that paperwork and boards and stuff like that, I'm not your guy. Never had been. Never did anything done.
Ah. Yeah, there are some people that love that kind of service and they're really good at it.
I'm good at it a little. And we need them.
Oh, I thank God for them. I'm more like you. I seem to find my place very much into that particular type of...
you know, in the field, so to speak.
Yeah.
I was at an AA meeting one time, and the President of the United States was in there with his wife. Clancy was speaking. And he said, that it was the funniest thing, one of the funniest lines I ever heard. The Secret Service are all over the place, right? And Clancy said, you know, I never had problems with subordinates, he says. It was just those assholes who were over me. Well... Ford started laughing like hell. I mean, it was just hilarious. All the Secret Service guys, they were laughing once ago, like this is holding his head like I identify, you know. Well, it used to be so much, you know, so much fun.
Yeah, it still is. Sounds like you, so you still go to a few meetings a week, or?
Oh, yeah, I mean, at least three or four, sometimes more. When that newcomer didn't show up last night, he said, well, I'm here, that's all I can do. That's it. You know, they always seem to feel better when they leave an AA meeting. Or a CA meeting, you know what happened? You know you're not alone. You may have helped someone. But, I mean, that's how you forget yourself. You forget yourself by being in action, helping others. The whole deal, isn't it?
That's it.
Without that, we'd all be about us. But when you're helping other people, when you become, you know, part of something bigger than yourself, you know,
then that's a life worth living, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. There's meaning to your life. I mean, look at it. You guys did a wonderful job, 59 countries all around the world. Huh? Without you, what would have happened to those people? They'd probably all be, you know, dead or whatever, in jail. Some of them are making it. That's a wonderful thing.
So in the 11-step prayer, when it says, Lord, make me an instrument of your peace, right?
Yeah.
I'd say that that you've answered that call.
Yeah. You know, a lot of people.
And you're still answering it.
A lot of people answer the call. You know, it's you do it for yourself because you know if you don't do it, you're going to die. Okay? If anybody can get help by that, fine. By our service. But I don't go to AA now, you know, just to help others. I go there because that's what I do. You know what Dr. Bob said? He was dying from prostate cancer. And the woman said to him, why don't you stay home, Bob, and conserve your energy? And he said, I found something that works perfectly fine, and I'm not about to change it now. He said, and the second thing is, I don't want to deprive myself of the friendships I've made in this fellowship. But the most important thing, he said, is when a new man or new woman come through that door, I'm living proof that AA works if you work AA. That's what we do.
Wow.
That's the stuff we do around here.
That's the stuff we do around here, yeah. Right.
You can just keep on doing it as long as you can do it. That's it. So those of us who keep doing it, you know, we're the smallest percentage, but we're usually the ones who stay sober long term. Because we're doing it.
And you never know what God's got in store for you, right? You never know that the work you did then becomes...
And you got to have faith in the future, you know. I mean, without faith in the future, you close your eyes and live in the past? No. Future's there. You know? I still believe I have a future. I know I do. You know, I'm not done yet. When I'm done, I'm done. So what? No big deal.
Yeah, I like that faith in the future. That's what the Cocaine Anonymous logo is, hope, faith, and courage.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we live forward. We don't live backwards. We live for the future. You never know what's going to happen. You may come up with another idea. You may come up with another thing, you know. You can't do as much because you don't have as much energy, you know. But you still have, you know, some things you may want to achieve or, you know, accumulate. I don't want to accumulate anything, but, you know. But we always have a program to help people. I mean, you think psychiatry helps these people? No.
We're the only ones. Can't help alcoholics and addicts.
Think any treatments are programmed? You know, they come out of a treatment program, then you got to straighten their asses out, for Christ's sake. You know? Well, my therapist says, I don't care what your therapist says. Call your therapist. Don't call me if that's how it is. You know? We know how we do it around here. I mean, they did a survey on 4 of the best treatment programs in the country. You know, after 4 years, what the success rate was? 7%. And you know where they were? In some self-help program. You know? That's all.
Yeah.
I mean, I got a call from a guy from Betty Ford's one time. He said, I had 6 names on the inside of my big book, he said. He said, one's dead, one's in jail, and the rest are drinking like I'm drinking. And he said to me, he says, well, they told me to call you. You know? And I said, well, did you ever stay sober after Betty Ford? He says, well, for 6 months. He says, but I was going to AA every day. And I said to him, well, I think you better go back to AA every day. He says, there's got to be something else. I says, not that I know of. No. Go back to AA.
It is that simple.
It's simple. When you complicate this thing, you know, you confuse people, and they say, oh, man, I can't make it in this house. You got to keep it simple. It's about love and it's about service. You know? And if you do love and you do service long enough, you're going to change for the better. You cannot be living that way of life and not change. It's the deal. Simple. Don't want to complicate it. These treatment programs for pleasure. I heard Chuck C. say 25 years ago, if I work my program the way some of these new people work their program, I'd be drunk. This is about love and it's about service. That's what it's about. So keep it as simple as you can.
Yeah. I'm with you. I think I probably go to more meetings than most of the men I sponsor.
Yeah. You don't become a marriage counselor. You don't become any of that. You know how to stay sober. You know how, if you do certain things, you're going to change. That's it. Actions speak louder than words. It always has. Right?
Cool. Well, I'm going to...
Hit the road.
I guess I'll hit the road and head towards the city. I'd like to... come back sometime where I can, I'll bring my wife Dawn up here, we'll get a hotel in town, then we can maybe catch a dinner and a meeting.
Sure, yeah, anytime. Let me know.
What a pleasure. Okay, so I'll stay in touch.
All right.
Jerry, stay in touch. So I'm gonna take a picture of you and send it to Ken Cross right now with a note of where I'm at. Ken, by the way, sends his regards. He was so happy that I was doing this, right?